Fantastic. Well, thank you all for joining. Welcome to April's LHON live phone call. My name is Jessica, and I'm one of the hosts. We also have two other hosts, Maria Johnson. Are you there? Maria Johnson says hello, and Andy Marks, who actually might be late as well. He is running late on a work event. But we are so excited to have this call. We're, 2 months away from the LHON Live Conference coming up in June. We are a week and a half away from the Boston Marathon, if anyone's counting. And we have a fantastic guest speaker, Michelle, joining us today. So, Michelle, I'd like to welcome you and thank you so much for joining us today. I will also mute myself, but we'd love to, let's start with family and when you were first diagnosed.
Yeah, sure. So my name is Michelle Gipp, and I'm originally from Fresno, California, and I was diagnosed with LHON when I was 10. And around at that same time, my brother was also diagnosed, and he is younger than I am. So in my immediate family, I have a mother and brother who are also affected with LHON. On my mom's side of the family, she has 5 siblings, who are all female. So she has 5 sisters, each of, so including herself, they all had 2 kids, 1 boy, 1 girl. At this time, I have other cousins who are affected. I have 4 other cousins, 4 other cousins who are affected. I kind of forget now because I just had a cousin recently affected with LHON about 1.5 or 2 years ago, something like that. Anyway, so,
and that's totally when I was like, oh my gosh, you know, like when you were talking about all your family being affected, that's some crazy stats, right? Like that's a strong LHON gene for sure. So anyways, that was part of one of the, my, oh my gosh, is that's crazy, but really cool at the same time.
So I have, you know, my cousins doing different things in the blindness field as well, teaching O&M, working in accessibility, going to college, different things like that. I started while I was in high school. Hold on, I'm trying to figure out what I'm trying to talk about. So growing up as someone who was affected with LHON, I got services in the school system to learn cane skills, braille, independent living, things like that. When I graduated from high school, I ended up attending a training center. I attended the Colorado Center for the Blind in Littleton, Colorado. During my time there, I learned different blindness-related skills. And then after that, I went on to go to college, and I pursued a bachelor's in psychology with a minor in peacemaking and conflict studies. In between school years, I worked summer programs at our NFB training centers in Colorado, Minnesota, and Louisiana. During that time, I realized that I was really good at teaching and that I had the passion and dedication to work with blind youth. So I was encouraged and convinced to pursue a master's in education. So a semester before I graduated from college, I finished that and I decided I was going to pursue a master's in education. I shifted gears, started researching all that, and I decided to attend Louisiana Tech. And there I got my master's in teaching blind students as well as my certifications in Braille and O&M. I graduated with my master's about 2 years ago. After completing that, I got a job at Blind Incorporated, one of our training centers, Blind Incorporated. It's an acronym for Blindness, Learning, and New Dementias, located in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and that's where I work today. I'm the youth services coordinator there, so anything youth-related from K through 12, I kind of work with students throughout the year on blindness skills for Braille and cane travel, home management, assistive technology, things like that. I coordinate summer programs that we have for our blind kids during the summer for kids of all ages for them to gain the skills that they don't often get during the school year. They don't get enough of for them to have peer interactions with other blind people, blind role models, and different things like that. So that's what I do today, and I've had a little bit of experience working with all of our NFB training centers. So I know there's been some questions about how do we go to an NFB training center, or what is it all about? What makes us different than other training centers that are out there? So if anyone has specific questions about things like that, I'm more than happy to answer them.
I mean, first of all, I mean, knowing that everyone's muted, but I feel like everyone has the same jaw drop moments that I did. Like, you've been accomplished and done so many successful things, traveled and lived cross country and just made your way. I mean, it's impressive. And then having kids is really cool. So, yeah, I'm pumped to know you. So that's fantastic. But what does NFB, what makes it different? Like, we talked about the, like, their motto and, like, what their mission is. Share a little bit about that because I think it's really cool.
So with the NFB training centers, we are a structured discovery center. And besides our three NFB training centers, there's three state-run structured discovery centers as well, which are in New Mexico, Nebraska, and Hawaii. But we are a private nonprofit, and we are an adjustment to blindness training center that really focuses on the core blindness skills of career readiness, cane travel, Braille, assistive technology, and home management. We make sure that our students are empowered and ready to go into the world doing whatever they want to do, whether that's going to college or getting a job or anything else. We want students to be able to live the life they want, and blindness is not going to hold them back. So structured discovery allows that teaching method, allows students to gain the skills in order to build their confidence, in order to transfer their skills to wherever they go. So, you know, just because they got training in Colorado doesn't mean they have to stay there. They can go to California or Arizona or wherever they want to. So it allows people to do what they want and not really be confined to that area. So, you know, like in cane travel, we teach basic cane technique. And then we teach about public transportation and the address system, and all of those things can be transferable to wherever they decide to go.
That is awesome. So your job, like, that's an awesome job. What do you find to be the most rewarding moments or things, especially in what age range of kids do you work with?
I work with students of all ages, so primarily I work with youth, but, you know, I do get to, during the school year, I do get experience working with our adults in our adult program and our senior program and things like that. I think working with blind people, I think the most rewarding thing is to see students gain their confidence, for them to realize, like, yes, they can do this still, regardless of how much vision they have.
I totally agree. I think that's something we all face, whether new or old to LHON, to gain that confidence again kind of makes us all kind of have that aha, like, we got this moment, you know, and it's cool you get to see that every single day.
Right, exactly.
So having all of this knowledge and experience, and especially with a family with LHON, if there's someone that's new to the call and maybe just being diagnosed to LH1, what advice do you have that maybe you could share with them? Sorry, this is kind of a tough question, and I didn't tell you about this one.
No, you're totally fine. So I think it's important to always have high expectations, whether you yourself is affected with LHON or you know some of his, to always have high expectations and to be like, yes, you can do this. If you want to do it, do it. You know, nothing is really stopping you from doing what you want to do.
Best advice ever. I'm like, this is awesome. This is why we love you and have you on the call. Like, that's, I wish every person would have that mentality, because you can do anything you want to do. It just takes time, it takes adjustments, and get out there and do it. I love that. Do you have any, like, tips and tricks or anything? Like, especially since you've moved so many times, and so far, is there things that you find that you do that kind of just makes life a little bit easier to kind of, I'm trying to even think of, like, what makes you kind of more efficient? I feel like you're a pro at, like, go.
I feel like that's a difficult question to answer, because I do so many different things now. Sometimes I don't think of it as necessarily being different. It's just the way I have to do things, or the way that I found to do things, being affected for so long, especially being affected as a kid. Like, it's all natural to me. Like, for me and my brother, like, that's just how we live life. I don't really think twice of it.
Okay, yeah, that's a good point.
I think something that's important to remember is, you know, some people who are affected still have some residual vision, and that's totally fine. But the fact that you can do them non-visually, I guess, is important, because, you know, we don't want to rely on the time of day, the lighting, the contrast, or whatnot in order to be able to do something. So when we teach these skills at our NSC training centers, we have students who have residual vision to wear sleep shades, and this allows students to kind of focus on their other senses, to really hone in on their tactile skills and their hearing and things like that, because we don't have to teach students to use their vision. If they have it, they're going to use it. They know how to. Great. But we have to really teach students to use the non-visual. So if something's not working for them, they know how to cook if the light's not bright enough, or if they're outside and the sun's too bright, they're going to know how to travel still.
That's a really good point, because we were talking about, you know, like, you don't have to jam your face up right to a cup to see if it's full. Use your non-visual cues to be able to tell if your water glass is full. So you don't really have to, like, look like the blind person. Like, you can do everything else just like anybody else, and so use those nonverbal cues.
Exactly.
Is it hard to teach someone that maybe, I mean, loses vision later in life? Because it's hard to teach me.
I don't think so. I think, like the other day I worked with a senior who recently lost their vision, and they pick it up, you know, like, with repetition and practice, I think anyone can get it.
Okay, perfect. Well, I feel like I want to open up to the floor. I feel like there's going to be a lot of really good questions just on your work and family and so many great things. So I would love to open it up to the floor now to see what questions you guys have for Michelle, and definitely some advice, because we got an expert on the line.
Michelle, it's Liz. I've got a question. Could you, as you said, you grew up in NorCal, so you probably started your acquisition of blindness skills in whatever California offered you, and then at some point you started getting more of your training through the NFC training centers. So I suspect a lot of people who are on the call have also gotten some training from their local support system, whatever that was. Can you help explain, like, what's different between what an individual is getting generally in their local situation versus what they can get if they go to one of the NFB centers? What's different, and then how do, if they like what's different, how do they go about getting, you know, the ability to attend it?
Well, so I think for a lot of people, sometimes local agencies are a great option, especially, like, I feel like it's such a commitment to put your life on hold and decide that you want to go to this training center for 6 to 9 months and kind of just move and do that. I think for me personally, I realized that if I didn't actually, like, do it and put these skills to practice, I'd never get it. Like, there's one thing about going for the day, you learn all these things, and then I go home, and my mom's going to be like, I'll just do that for you, so not a big deal. And you never actually put those skills into practice. But I think overall, like, our local agencies or resources that we have around us have a different philosophy on blindness. Sometimes they have lower expectations and their teaching methods are different. There's more of a guided learning versus more of a discovery aspect, you know, like for O&M, for instance, is very route-based, like this is how you get from point A to point B. And they kind of practice that same thing over and over, but then it comes to like, well, what if that street is closed or there's construction? Then what are you going to do? And it becomes really difficult for some students to kind of realize like, well, then I can go this way instead, because they were only taught one way to do things. They weren't taught to be empowered and to problem solve their way out of a situation and figure it out for themselves. I also think that for some of our local agencies, it's really like, I'm going to teach you what we know here locally. And if they decide to move somewhere else, they kind of have to be retrained to that area because they don't have the understanding and confidence within themselves to figure it out, to learn a new area. Like, those skills that we talk about are not necessarily transferable. And so with our NSC training centers, we accept students from all over the country. So if people wanted to attend, they mainly go through their vocational rehabilitation. Every state calls it something different. But, yeah, through their voc rehab. And depending on the state, I feel like it's a little trickier than others, but as a consumer of that agency, everyone has the right to decide for themselves which training program they want to attend, what best fits them based on informed choice. So if people want documentation on that, right, I have that available as well. And sometimes if you decide you want to go to a training center, if you reach out to them, they're able to provide letters of justification as to why that can be beneficial to you and kind of help you fight that case as well.
Thank you.
That's a really great question. Does anybody else have anything?
I have a question. It's Ida in Canada. Those programs, are they open to people from Canada as well? And is there a cost involved?
Yes, we have all of our centers have taken international students. Depending on the center, we do provide a scholarship. Like, I know Colorado provides, well, actually all of our centers do. We provide a scholarship once a year to international students. And if not, we're able to work with the families on figuring out a cost that would best fit them. You know, we are a private nonprofit, so we're not looking to make money.
What would be the average cost to attend, let's say, a 6 month program?
I would say it's really hard to say, because sometimes some people and that it depends on what on the center, but I would say on average it's about for housing, because we are a residential program, so students stay in apartments that are near the center, and they come to the center using public transportation, whether that's the bus or light rail. So for housing, typically costs $1,000 a month, and then for training, I would say anywhere from $1,000 to $1,200 per week. But all of our centers are fairly flexible if need be, on financial assistance and scholarships and grants and things like that.
Okay, thanks.
But if it's a U.S. student, does Oak Rehab cover that full cost, or how does that work for a U.S.-based potential student?
Oak Rehab covers all the costs for housing, training expenses. They should cover transportation, but some states say they don't have to. And they will be provided a maintenance check to help with groceries and meals, student activities, things like that. And that's usually about $200 every 2 weeks.
Got it.
I have a question.
Yep, go for it.
What do you do when the state does not provide that for your son or daughter, when you're still waiting to get them to assist your son or daughter?
So is this like you are currently waiting for this to happen, or just as a general question?
Still waiting for that to happen, for that assistance, for that stipend.
For the stipend, you mean, like for the maintenance check and things like that?
Yes.
So that is usually part of the training expenses, and that stipend usually comes from the center, like as a sense, like if they were a blind incorporated student, blind incorporated would make them out a check every 2 weeks, but it doesn't come from Oak Rehab necessarily.
Well, I have a son that has started in January and is still waiting for a stipend.
I think at that time, at that point, I would try to talk to their counselor, but also their supervisor. Sometimes we shake them up a little bit. It helps.
Okay.
And I think it's also important when things like that happen to have the consumer themselves advocate for themselves as to like, hey, I need this because of this reason, and it'll help me because of this reason.
They have been. So his family just set up an ongoing support system.
Mm-hmm.
In lieu of the state, because the state has been doing that.
I have a question. It's Lisa from Canada.
Okay.
First of all, you're pretty amazing what you've gone through at such a young age and how far you've achieved and accomplished, so well done. I don't think
Thanks.
You said how old you are. I'm assuming early 20s, but I could be wrong.
I am. That is correct.
Okay. you say you offer this program to international students, so I'm assuming
mm-hmm.
you're referring to Canada as international. When you say student, does that apply to adults as well?
Yeah, it does, yeah.
Okay.
So,
another question then, because you seem very knowledgeable in this field, do you know if there's anything offered in Canada like what you have in the States? Because
not at this time, they don't.
No, because, I mean, I would say most most Canadians, and I'm, if you're just newly affected, I'm not, obviously, but starting out, that would be very, very expensive for them to go all that way to try and, you know, the costs are just outrageous.
Yeah, I would agree.
You know, unless would they allow a Canadian citizen to move the state for that? Do you know?
I think so. Yeah, I've worked with a couple Canadian students in both Colorado and Louisiana actually, and they made the move where they had some financial assistance to help with that.
Well, I congratulate you on your success and what you've done. You seem very ahead of the world, and you know, good luck to you in the future.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Chris in Pennsylvania. I too am want to congratulate you as well too. You can be so proud of what you've achieved. You've done very well for yourself and are a great example to everyone. But I do have a couple questions, just at large here for the group. I'm curious as to how many students are at the facility, what the age range might be, and do you work one-on-one with each student, or are they in a group setting?
Those are all really good questions. So we, in our adult programs, we take students from all ages, wherever they've been, like no matter how much skills they've had. Because, you know, we always believe that students can be lifelong learners, you know? So with that, students take all of our classes that I've mentioned earlier, and they are in classes that are in, there's about 2 to 3 students per class, and our curriculum's tailored to the individual. You know, occasionally they'll get individualized training, but they're not necessarily by themselves. And, you know, sometimes they'll be asked to work on a cooking project with another person to figure stuff out together, or on a travel assignment, things like that. But, you know, while they're working with other people, they're also gaining skills to problem solve together. So they're not like, oh, no, what do? Like, I'm by myself kind of thing.
And how many students are
at one time at the center?
Yes.
So at Blind Incorporated, we are the smallest amount of students, I believe. So in Louisiana, they take approximately 25 to 30 students at a time. In Colorado, anywhere from 28 to 32. And at Blind Incorporated, we take 18 to 25 students. So sometimes if people want the smaller class sizes, I feel, depending what people want, I feel like we can best meet their needs. So sometimes people come to Blind Incorporated for the smaller class sizes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
People want the public transportation and things. They go to Colorado or Minnesota. That rural life, they go to Louisiana. It's located in Ruston, Louisiana. So depending what people want.
And when a student goes there, how long are they usually expected to attend?
To complete the entire program, it's about 6 to 9 months. And we say that because, you know, we can teach the skills in about 2 to 3 months, but to actually have them gain, to build the confidence and the problem solving, the emotional adjustments of blindness, usually takes a couple months in the beginning in itself.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Michelle, you just brought up a really good point talking about emotional. Is there counselors on hand, and you get to kind of have that connection? Because oftentimes we do talk about the emotional side and how hard it is to deal with losing vision. Do you get to talk about that?
So we have a class called Seminar or Philosophy, depending on the center. And we use that, it's about 2.5-3 hours spread out throughout the week. And they use that time to talk about different blindness-related issues, struggles, frustrations that we may have as a whole, and kind of discuss, like, how do you deal with those things? How do you deal with, you know, the attitudes that the society has towards blindness or family attitudes and things like that? And it's a good way for people to kind of talk and figure things out, learn from one another. We'll have guest speakers come in talking about different technology or where they've come as a blind person, different things like that. And if, you know, if students are really struggling with mental health in general, and that's more of a personal thing, then we do have counseling available outside of the center that we have connections with already. But I think as instructors, we are always, not counselors necessarily, but we are always teaching and working on emotional adjustments to blindness while we're teaching. You know, like we could be teaching cane travel and students are going to talk about their fears of loud noises and traffic and not sure if they can ever take a bus independently. So you're always working with them, talking them through it and making them feel comfortable, things like that.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, and that's huge. I mean, nothing beats someone being around somebody that totally gets it. I mean, we all kind of experience that here on these calls. It's just, it's priceless, really.
It's Ida again. I have another, well, it's not really a question. I met a young woman who goes to Carleton University, but she has actually signed up for the 6 months program in Colorado. And her mom was telling me that one of the tasks that she has to perform by the end of the program is she has to cook a meal for 60 people.
That is correct.
And I thought, and her mom and I were laughing, saying, my, we'd have a hard enough time, well, not me, but her mother who can see, doing that on sight. So she said, I can't imagine my daughter doing that being blind. So I just wanted to check and see, is that really a task they have to do?
So in home management, that is definitely a task for sure. And that's towards the end of their program, close to their graduation. And it teaches them that since they are able to do this big task, they can take on any other task. And it allows them to work on planning, time management, how to, you know, triple, quadruple, recipe, different things like that.
Wow.
No, I'm on this conference call.
Okay.
Sorry. Hold on 1 second. I'm muted.
I was just going to say, we can hear you. 60 people, that's a lot of people. That's definitely a dinner party to have. They should do dinner in the dark for the community. But that does make sense. It makes sense why you would do it. It definitely seems like kind of a big task to defeat, but, you know, kind of the same thing again with the impairment and have that gigantic dinner party and invite all of your neighbors over. And, oh my gosh, if Cindy's listening to the phone call, Cindy is one of these fantastic people, friends that I love to talk to on a daily basis. She's actually newly affected and just hosted a dinner party. And, you know, like, newly affected hosting a dinner party, I'm like, yeah, you got this. And you know what? She said it was one of the best dinners. She had an absolute blast. And she's like, it went over great. And I'm like, yeah, like, it's cool to just see, like, yeah, absolutely, you can do anything you want. And Cindy is an awesome example of that. So shout out to Cindy. I love to hear those stories. What else? Do you want to share a little bit about schooling? That's always kind of a big topic that we talk about with schooling. And so, I mean, you had the whole shebang, your entire life. You got to progress with, obviously, technology progressing, got better. What things helped you along the way?
With schooling, so I feel like I've been in school, like, my entire life, which I have, except for this last year. So it's really odd to me. I almost feel like I need to go back to school or something. But
right, you have all this time.
I learned, you know, once I was affected with LOHON, I learned Braille right away. So I kind of spent my entire life as like a dual media reader. I know print and I know Braille. Definitely more of a Braille reader because it's a lot more quicker and efficient. So I spent high school, college, and grad school doing that. I read using a Braille display so I can have it connected to my phone or my computer and kind of see what's going on. So with Braille, I feel like there's always this misconception out there about Braille being this thing that we don't need to teach anymore because technology is so advanced. And the thing about that, you know, Braille is the key to literacy for blind and visually impaired students everywhere, I think, just because that, you know, they're not going to understand the spelling and the grammar and syntax and structure and everything that goes along with literacy if they're not able to see it, if we just do everything auditorily. So that's how I feel about that. And so I really try to teach that to all of the students that I work with, especially in the school systems and stuff, and sometimes that's a little trickier. But I think overall, being a student, I think it's important to know what works for you and to just continue doing that, you know, to be an advocate for yourself. Because, you know, the only one who's going to know what works best is going to be yourself. So whether you're working with professors or disability services, you're gonna know which accommodations best work.
Well said, I love it. Yeah. I mean, it totally makes sense. Do we have any new callers on the line that would love to jump in and ask, that maybe are just getting into it? We have a great resource here.
Hey Jessica. Hello?
Yes?
Hey, this is Corey. I'm a current student here at the Colorado Center for the Blind, so I just kind of wanted to lend my experience of how it's been so far, if you don't mind.
Yeah, that is perfect. Please share.
Yeah, so I've only been here about 2 months now, and I did receive services in Jersey, but I still felt like I needed some more training for my blindness skills. And it's been a great experience so far. And just to comment on some of the things that were mentioned, I'm actually in my travel class. I'm working with someone from Canada. They're on a scholarship though, and
yeah.
theirs is for 6 months. So we came in around the same time, but she's leaving 3 months before me. But she did mention it was a scholarship that allowed her to be here. But they'll work with you on the time frame. She needs to leave earlier. Or they'll prolong it a bit. And the one thing I do like about all the classes is, one, all my instructors are visually impaired in some way. Some are totally blind. So they do have that perspective of some of them lost sight later in life and some have always been blind. So they, in their own lives, use the skills that they're teaching. And also they allow you to move at your own pace. So that was one of my biggest concerns, was that as soon as I got in there, I'd be like thrown into the water. if I couldn't swim. And they are really patient with you, and they work with you and, you know, make sure you're not panicking or, you know, overwhelmed with anxiety based off of whatever your assignment is. For travel, we're learning the bus route and the light rail, or even some days we'll just go to a quiet neighborhood and work on cardinal directions, north, south, east, west. Even some unique things like paying attention to which side the sun is hitting you,
yeah.
To know where you came from and listen to the traffic. A lot of these things I never really keyed in on and paid attention to, listening to which way the traffic is flowing and the difference between cement as opposed to asphalt. So that's pretty unique. And with the home management class where I'm cooking, I didn't really cook that much. I mean, in college, I did as much as I could with my ramen noodles, but that wasn't a, we're not making that there. So I just made my first omelet, which I'm very proud of. made like a Cajun chicken and shrimp pasta. But basically you work with your instructor and they try to figure out what your goals are and you strategically, systematically get to where you need to be, with their assistance, of course. And all of this is under the sleep shades, which is, that was probably and is the most difficult part for me because I still
I would agree.
remaining vision, which I want to use. But like, what's the speaker's name? I forget her name.
Michelle.
Like she was saying too, they teach you to focus on your other senses, to not rely on, because we already know how to use our sight, you know, to figure things out and problem solve. So just to wrap up, I'm really enjoying my experience so far. I have a long way to go, but just starting out, but the people there are really helpful and, they're helping a lot to help me get to where I need to be with in terms of independence after losing sight later in life. So.
Corey, it's Lisa. Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
It's kind of a two-part. How long ago did you lose your vision?
May 2013. So that's about 5 years coming up in May.
So, I mean, how do you feel about doing what you're doing now? Versus, like, what if, you know, 5 years ago when you first lost sight, if you'd shown up in Colorado, like if someone had said, oh, this is what you should do, and you'd gone there, do you think you would have warmed up to it and felt comfortable, or do you think for you, you know, kind of doing what you've been doing and then going now, how do you feel about the timing of doing, you know, do you have a sense on that?
Yeah, I think timing is was everything with me deciding to go there. I mean, when I first was diagnosed, I shifted my focus to how do I see again? How do I get 20/20 vision again? And going to one of these centers would mean I accepted blindness and this is my new normal and this is how it's going to be. And that wasn't the headspace that I was in at all. I wasn't prepared to do anything like this back then. I was really fighting. I was still faking that I still had sight. I tried to look certain places and not just act like I could still see fine, and I really wasn't at the point where I wanted to explain LH1 to everybody everywhere I went. But just through the years, I just noticed, you know, the cure, treatment, whatever, may not come tomorrow, may not come next week, next month, so I shouldn't stop harping on that and try to figure out how can I live my best life with the vision that I do have, and what are the skills that I need to still go out and have fun and live on my own, cook for myself, get around without being dependent on other people. So definitely it took a change in mindset, outlook, perspective, mental readiness. I said on a call before that I saw a counselor, spoke about, you know, adjustment to vision loss, to just talk it through, talk it out with someone to get my feelings out. But definitely when I was losing it, I was not in a position to attend one of these. I actually heard about it early on with the onset of LH1, but I just never saw myself committing to a program like this for 6 to 10 months. I had too much living to do. But now I'm glad, you know, I just really sat down with myself and certain family members moved away from me. Brother went to the military. Another brother moved the state away. Some close friends moved just for better situations for themselves. And I saw myself just still sitting at home waiting for someone to pick me up and waiting for someone to help me with whatever it may be. And I just took a look in the mirror and said, you know, I need to do something that's going to benefit me so that I don't necessarily need others to go on with my life. And I want to pick it back up from training my bachelor's, potentially go for a master's, and also increase where I'll look for employment, not just within a 5 to 10 mile radius of the town that I know. You know, maybe I can move to another state or further away from home. And I feel like this program is allowing me, or will, once I'm finished or completed, will allow me to have that confidence to do that.
Great, thank you.
Welcome. Hey, Corey, this is Wayne. Glad to hear
hey,
you
Wayne.
Doing so
hey.
Well. And
how's it going?
Looking forward to seeing you and the family at the conference.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. As long as you're singing karaoke. Yeah.
This is Lance. I have a question for Michelle. Are you still there?
Yes.
I'm starting school in August. I have so many questions. I'm trying to sort out the ones I want to ask first. But you've been in school for a while, and I'm faced with the fact that I may need to do algebra again. I'm very excited about that as part of my core curriculum to get to where I need to go. And it is my intent to take the Nemeth math code course through Hadley. I was wondering if you had any experience with such things and what they may have been.
So I just want to make sure that I understand your question. So is it, do I have any experience with Nemeth or taking courses through Hadley?
With the Nemeth code and how you may have, how did you do math blind?
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I know the Nemeth code up to statistics. That's as far as I got in math and did a little bit of calculus, but not a ton. So my Nemeth is okay. But I also do work with it, like, on with students now. Like, I teach, working on teaching algebra to a student and trig to another. So I think Nemeth is very doable. I think, you know, if you do it through Hadley, it's a good way to do things just because you're able to work at your own pace. And if you have the self-discipline to do a kind of independent course that way, I'd say go for it. But if you ever have any questions about Nemeth, like, for sure, let me know. I really like math.
Yeah. So learning Nemeth is going to be essential if I'm going to be doing algebraic equations. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
I would say so, just because, you know, math is such a visual thing, and to really see the whole problem at once and to figure it out that way, since math is so spatial, and especially for graphs, and I find it really important as well.
Okay. I don't want to hold the call hostage, but I got another question. I'm definitely interested in using a Braille display. I touched on it in my last rehab program, but it seems like the learning curve is a little steep. But I plan on getting one within the next 6 months. And is there if I get one of these things, is there a resource? I don't know if it's through Freedom Scientific or something like that, that you know, where you can learn this thing after you buy it. And how did you use a Braille display in school as well?
So I decided ahead of time. Well, when I was in the school system, they gave me different ones to use, and I kind of like used that one because that's the one they gave me. But when I was in college, I kind of decided like which one would work best for me, how many cells I want in a Braille display, what functions I want. Do I want a note taker or just a display? Which brand, you know, whether it's from Hims or Freedom Scientific or Humanware. But I really worked with my vocational rehabilitation counselor in order to determine which one was best for me and told them the reasons why I wanted this one, and I had them purchase it. So I guess to answer your question, I would kind of try to figure out with you what kind of Braille display you're looking for, what are you wanting it to do, and then figure out what resources there are to obtain it.
Did you use it in college? Was it an essential tool for you, or how useful was it in school?
Yes, I used it to read most of my textbooks, as well as write and edit papers. I think editing was really big. You know, if I'm listening to JAWS or VoiceOver read something, I can hear that it sounds right, but I don't necessarily know if it's spelled correctly or if a comma or semicolon is in the correct spot.
So you digested your books in Braille instead of using JAWS to read them to you?
Yeah, I don't really have the attention span to just listen to something talk at me, so I definitely use Braille.
All right.
Thank you. And thanks for your story and relaying it to us. I'm impressed, and I appreciate you sharing it with us.
Of course, anytime. Okay, and I have a dumb question, and maybe I'm the only one that doesn't know this, but when you say Braille reader and you use it with your phone and then you use it at textbooks, what does that mean? What is a Braille reader?
Oh, so a Braille display is, well, there's a Braille note taker and a Braille display. I won't get very technical. So basically, it's a display that's the top portion. It looks just like a Braille writer, has the same six-key layout, space bar in the middle thing. But on the bottom is a display that pops up in Braille, and it's refreshable. So as whatever is on the screen changes, it changes on the bottom as Braille, so you can follow along.
So are you, like, plugging your phone into the Braille display and reading to you what your phone is?
You could plug it into a computer via USB, but most people just do it Bluetooth. So just kind of the same way you'd use a Bluetooth keyboard.
Ah, okay, wow, cool. And is Audrey or Chaz on the phone? I know Chaz actually just graduated as well. No? No, it is about time. It's about an hour, and I'm so happy to have you. You were, I mean, I'm impressed. It was just fantastic to hear your story and to learn about your family and everything that you have accomplished, and so it's fantastic. And then, of course, to be a great resource for us for the training center. So thank you so much for being this resource for us and inspiration and motivation and empowering us all on the same hour of phone call. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And super pumped to be able to have a student also join Sequoia. Thanks for jumping in and giving us your insight. It was exciting to, gosh, after hearing both of you, I'm like, you definitely get some perspective. And, like, go ahead and ask about perspective. It's true. Like, you have to be ready sometimes for the training and to take on a different way to look at things, you know. And so I appreciate you both jumping in and sharing with us. I will
definitely anytime.
No, thank you. I do want to ask Lisa to end the recording, but please hang tight if you'd like to continue and ask Michelle any other questions, or maybe Corey ask any other questions. But at this time, I just want to thank you, Michelle. Thank you so much for taking the time to meet with us today. It was fantastic to have you, and you're a great resource to our LHLN community. So you guys, please reach out if she can help you with anything, and if we can help you with anything, it's great to have you. So thank you.
Hold on, I'll turn it off, and then people can hang on for the post-recording call. Hold on.
Okay, thank you, Lisa.